Hey, good morning, church. Good to see everybody. My name is Scott Franks. I'm the preaching minister here. So if we have not met, I look forward to getting to know you a little bit. And if you are new with us, I'm so glad you came this morning. I'm so glad you saw that little presentation, as has been mentioned. And I just want to say one more thing about Margaret Smith. One thing about Margaret that you'll notice if you're around her very long, she'll say, love you, love you. And she means it. That's one thing I appreciate so much about Margaret, is she means when she says that. She loves God, she loves your kids. And so if you're looking for a church home, this is a place where people like Margaret will pour into your children, and they will be loved here. And they will get to know God's love here because of people like her. And so I'm so glad that we have one of many people like Margaret here in our children's ministry. Well, we are in a series called The Story. And we are following the narrative portion of the Bible, the story portion of the Bible, and following the story of salvation, God's plan for saving us from our sin. And we've been reading a chapter a week in the story, and now we have just finished this past week the first part of the book of Exodus. In Exodus, we meet Moses. And Moses is a figure that we spend a lot of time with in the story, more so than most people. Moses is going to make an appearance in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and so we get to know him a little more than we do most folks in the Bible. And so how do you picture Moses? I imagine it's probably, you know, like what you see up on the screen, an old man, he's solemn, a long white beard, a staff. But if that's how you picture Moses, you might wonder, what do I possibly have in common with that? This hairy old man out in the Middle Eastern desert who lived 3,500 years ago, how could I possibly relate to him? What could he possibly have to teach me about life now? Well, here's what I'm going to bet with you this morning. I bet your experiences are going to intersect with Moses' life more than once. I bet you'll be surprised at how many times his experiences are the same as yours. No matter if you're young or old, no matter if you're male or female, I'm willing to bet you will find yourself in some of the same situations or feeling the same emotions or asking the same questions as Moses. Now, Moses was unique in a lot of ways. Moses, you know the whole story. He was born to Hebrew slaves, Israelite slaves. Was under a death penalty. They were exterminating baby boys born to Hebrews. And so his mom tried to save him by putting him in a basket in the Nile River. He was found by Pharaoh, the king's daughter, and was adopted. And so here is a Hebrew slave who is raised in the palace. And I think because of that, Moses knew he was special. I think he had that feeling always. And he was uniquely placed to be an inspiration to the Hebrews, to possibly even rescue them from their slavery, to become their leader somehow. And that, I would guess, that was kind of a dream. That was kind of a vision that he carried inside himself. And I say that for a couple reasons. One is based on what happened one day when he went to visit his people. So here's what happened. We'll pick up the story in Exodus 2, starting verse 11. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. And looking this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day, Moses went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. And he asked the one in the wrong, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? And the man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me the way you killed the Egyptian? And then Moses was afraid. And he thought, what I did must have become known. And when Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian. Now, maybe you can relate to that. Not to the killing someone part. Maybe you've wanted to. Not too much to the murder part, but to this. Trying to do it your way, and it's not working. Maybe you can relate to that. You know, you have a vision for your future and what you want to do, but you're also kind of sense this gnawing fear this gnawing realization that that image, that dream is slipping away. And you're starting to maybe hear from even some other people saying, it might be time to face reality. It might be time to recognize that that dream is just a dream. For Moses, in one day, it evaporated. In one day, he was no longer the prince and the promise of either the Israelites or the Egyptians. In one day, he realized nobody respected him or wanted him now. And Moses, I would imagine he's probably angry and hurt that his bold plan to free the Israelites had been misunderstood or dismissed by his own people. I mean, look at what he risked for them. Look at what he risked when he intervened and killed that slave master. He gave up his entire Egyptian life. That side of his life, its wealth and its status and its power and its prestige. And he risked all of that for the sake of the Hebrew slaves. But when he tried to come through for them, they do not accept him as a leader. They don't see him that way. And now his people don't want him. The Egyptians do want him. They want him for first-degree murder. And so he has to escape. He runs across the desert to a place called Midian. And there he meets a family that is the father of the family is named Jethro, and he settles in and becomes a part of that family. So Exodus 2:21, Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage, and Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. Moses names his kid Gershom, which means wanderer, sojourner, foreigner, because that's how he feels. That's how he pictures himself. He names his son that, which is kind of a sad name, but that kind of seems to be what Moses views himself as now. He went from a prince of Egypt to a shepherd, and that's where he stays for 40 years. 40 years from the age of 40 to the age of 80. We can only guess how Moses was feeling during all that time, but I have to believe that on some level, he felt stuck in neutral, with no vision for something better. I'd have to think that that was a pretty big letdown from being prince of Egypt to shepherd in the desert. This is not what he dreamed of. This is not when he felt so special. This surely could not be what God had meant. Surely this is not what God intended for him. And again, maybe you can relate to that. You don't feel like you're accomplishing anything. You're not really moving towards a goal. You're not really knowing what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, is this it? Is this as good as it gets? Or maybe you're wondering, am I good at anything? Am I going to ever accomplish anything? Maybe you have people asking you that. When are you going to do something with your life? Or maybe you can relate to Moses toward the end of that period, when he was getting older, and maybe you're getting older, and you kind of settled into how, well, I guess this is how things are. This is who I am. And it wasn't what you imagined, and it's not very satisfying, but what can you do? But people, God's timing is not our timing. And like I said before, I think God had been working on Moses all of those years. He was humbling him, and then he was shaping him for something big. And after 40 years of leading sheep in the desert, God calls to Moses from a burning bush with an unbelievable assignment. God says, I want you to go back to Egypt, to the people that rejected you, to the government that wants to kill you, and I want you to do what you wanted to do 40 years ago, but we're going to do it my way, not your way. I can't imagine what that stirred in Moses, but one thing it does stir is a lot of fear. He's got a lot of questions. He's got a lot of what ifs. And so in Exodus 3 and 4, there's this dialogue between Moses and God. And it's Moses saying, it's Moses saying, I don't think you got the right guys. Moses, I don't think it's the right time. Exodus 3:10, so God says, so now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Exodus 4:1, Moses said, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? P- Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to me. I'm slow of speech and tongue. And finally, Exodus 4:13, Moses just flat out says, send someone else. He says, pardon me from this assignment, God. Just send someone else. That's the only time in that whole dialogue that God gets mad. Until then, God just keeps responding, I can take care of this. I've got you. You just need to just trust me. It's when Moses says no, when Moses says just send someone else, that's the only time in that whole conversation that God gets angry. And Moses, he still feels like a failure. I think he sees himself as a failure. He's still hung up on how things didn't work out before, how people will still view him back there. And I think God spoke what had been on Moses' heart all those years. I think, in a sense, this is what he'd been called to. This is what he thought he'd been born to do. But now when he's actually called to do it, now when reality hits, the fears take over. And maybe that's something you can relate to. You know, being called or challenged and not feeling ready, not feeling worthy. Maybe you're a parent. And you're feeling stirred to step up as a spiritual leader in your family like you haven't before. Maybe God's been working on you, and you're feeling like, I need to do more. I need to start taking more responsibility for being the spiritual leader in my family. Or maybe you're feeling a little guilty. You're feeling a little ashamed because at work or at school, there are people that You feel an urge to, should I say something? Should I say, can I pray about that for you? Can I show you some verses that help me through that? Can we talk about that, some spiritual things? And you've wanted to, but you haven't. And it keeps coming up to that point, and you stay quiet. And the fears are, the voices in your head are, well, what if they ask questions and you don't know the answers? You're going to look so dumb. Or what if you step out like this, but they know how you've been, they know who you used to be, and you will look like such a hypocrite. You step out to lead your family, but maybe your spouse knows how you used to be. And because of the mistakes you've made as a parent before, now you feel compromised. Now you don't feel like you just don't have the authority to be the spiritual leader, even though you think you should be. How would they ever see me like that? I've made so many mistakes. I've messed up so many times before. How can I ever overcome that and be this different father, this different mother? You're afraid that if you step out right now, if you make this big change, you look like a hypocrite, that you look like a fool, that you will fail. I think that's part of what Moses was dealing with too. But finally Moses says, okay. He answers God's call. And so he goes back home. I can't imagine what he had to tell Zipporah, how he's going to explain this. Honey, pack up everything, pack up the kids. We're going to Egypt, the place where they want to kill me. Let's take the kids. Let's all go back to Egypt. Back to the place that I'm wanted for murder, where the biggest failure of my life. But he does what God told him to do. And at first it goes well, surprisingly well. When Moses goes back to his people, they're excited because they've been crying out to God, save us from this, rescue us from this slavery, from this terrible conditions that we live in. And so when he comes, here's the answer maybe. It's Moses. Moses is the one that's going to save us. And so they're excited. God's heard them. But then when he goes to Pharaoh, it does not go well at all because the king is unimpressed. The king has Pharaoh has no fear of this God that Moses is talking to out in the bush here. And so instead, he does something that Moses never expected. He doubles the workload of his Hebrew slaves. Apparently, you guys have too much time on your hands, and now you're causing these problems, and so we'll take care of that. And so he doubles their workload. He has no fear. And so all Moses has done apparently is made Pharaoh angry and made the Hebrews' lives worse. And so when they figure out what's going on, here's what it's like now when Moses walks down the streets on the Hebrew side of town. Exodus 5:21, and they, the Hebrews, said, "May the Lord look on you and judge you. You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials, and have put a sword in his hand to kill us." So Moses returned to the Lord. He said, "Why, Lord, have you brought this trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me, just to make their lives worse? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's brought trouble on this people. You have not rescued your people at all." This is so important. I want to stop here for a second. This is so important. If you feel a tug on your heart to step up, to speak out, if you're feeling called to make changes and start leading, to reach out or break old habits or overcome addictions or be baptized and make that commitment finally, you need to expect this. Doing the right thing will likely, at first at least, make life even more difficult. I just got to be honest with you. That's probably what you need to expect. And maybe you've been there already. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Because you decided to step up and be a more spiritual leader in your family, but it's not how you pictured. It's not going the way you hoped. You decide, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to do what I think God is calling me to do, to be the person I was meant to be in my house. And all it causes is complaints and grumbling from the kids. They complain every time you tell them it's time to go to church, or every time they miss sports to go to church. Every Sunday becomes a fight. And God, this is it? This is why you called me to be a spiritual leader in my family? Or you decide to speak out, and you're going to stop some unethical behavior in your workplace or on your team, and you're doing the right thing. And others may even know that you are doing the right thing, but they resist and they tear you down and they mock you. I just want to remind you, church, wide is the road that leads to destruction. And most people take it because it's easy to go with the flow. It's easy to go downhill. Narrow is the way, and few find it, that leads to righteousness. So doing the right thing does not make everything immediately easier. That's certainly how it works out for Moses. Far from it. Even after God frees them from Egypt, even after the 10 plagues, they're finally free from Egypt. They're out in the Sinai. They've been saved multiple times. They walk through the water of the Red Sea on dry ground. A few days, just a few days out in the desert, and they run out of water. And look who they blame. Exodus 17:2. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses replied, "Why are you quarreling with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why'd you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" And then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me." They complain about being in slavery, about being in Egypt. I take them out of Egypt. Now they expect me to provide water in the desert? They're blaming me? They're already complaining about, "I want to go back to Egypt?" Maybe that's what's kind of waiting for you tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, Monday morning, is kind of what that feels like. Because tomorrow morning, you can go to work, and the expectations are just impossible. There are quotas you're expected to meet. They're impossible. No one can meet these numbers. Or maybe you're a teacher, and all the paperwork you're supposed to do, all the administrative stuff, leaves no time for teaching the kids in your classroom. Or maybe you know what that feels like, to be blamed for things that you cannot change. The bottom line is, you are not enough. And that's right. That would be a good thing to tell yourself tomorrow morning. Monday morning, first thing you tell yourself is, "Today, I will not be enough. There will not be enough hours. There will not be enough of me. I won't be able to control everything or accomplish everything I want to." And we'll come back and talk more about that. But yeah, you're not enough. There's one other episode in the life of Moses that I wanted to share with you. And this is not one that was in the reading that you had this past week, because it comes later. It comes in the book of Numbers. But it's one I think a lot of you might relate to. And it's from Numbers 12, 1 and 2. It says, Miriam and Aaron, that's Moses' sister and Moses' brother, began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife. Now, Cushite, it could mean from Ethiopia. There's a few different possibilities of what that means. But the land of Cush was modern-day Ethiopia, for he had married a Cushite. And they would say, has the Lord spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. So that's his brother and his sister who are grumbling now. It's not just the rest of the people, it's his own family. And the Cushite wife, there's a couple possibilities. It could refer to his wife, Zipporah, the one that the mother of his children, the wife he took in Midian. Or it could be this was a second marriage. We don't know what happened with Zipporah. We don't know if she passed away and he married another woman who's from Ethiopia. We're not quite sure what exactly that is, but what we can tell from the tone and the words there is some ethnic prejudice against her. One of the things that they're kind of degrading is where she comes from. There's also sibling jealousy in here. Moses is the one that's getting all the credit. Moses is the one that is the number one guy. Well, what about us? Hey, we've done things for God too. And so either way, there's this jealousy against Moses, and there's this dislike of his wife. His family doesn't like her. The implication is she's not good enough. She isn't up to our standards, this foreigner. She just doesn't fit. And maybe you can relate to that. You're at odds with your family, or you just don't feel like you fit. Maybe there's friction with your in-laws and they criticize you every chance they get, or they just don't accept you. It just the things they say or the things that they don't say, you just kind of tell. They would really rather you were not a part of this. Maybe you have that feeling on the holidays. Or maybe there's conflict with your siblings for whatever reason. You are the favorite, or you're not the favorite, or you're too successful, or you're not successful enough for them. There's all kinds of reasons that there can be that sibling rivalry, even when we grow up. But I bet you can relate to that somehow. So I want you to look at your sermon notes. I've listed all those different ways that I thought maybe your life could intersect with Moses' experience. I want you to look at your sermon notes for a second. This list of experiences and questions and challenges from the life of Moses that I think make Moses pretty relatable. But you also might think, looking at that list, that Moses was pretty miserable. I mean, there was constant backsliding by the Israelites. There's resistance and there's grumbling about his leadership, even from his own brother and sister. And so he existed with this immense burden of responsibility. There's tens of thousands of people that he's supposed to lead and he's supposed to teach and he's supposed to be the judge between them. And they're out in the desert where there's constant issues with water and with food. They're being attacked by other tribes. He's second-guessing his own abilities sometimes. You look at that and you think, that sounds like a pretty miserable, I mean, who would want that? But there's one other facet of Moses that I want to show you. There's one other image of Moses that I want to leave you with that was happening during all of that. While all that was going on, there was something else happening simultaneously too. I want to show you what it is. This is one way I hope your life does intersect with Moses's. It's Exodus 34, and I'll tell you up front, it's just kind of a weird story. It's one of those little oddities in the Bible, but it's so fascinating. Exodus 34, 29. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. And when Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, so Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. And afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. And when Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what had been commanded, they saw that his face was radiant. And then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went in to speak again with the Lord the next time. There's one line from that reading I want to pull out and leave on the screen for just a little bit, and it's this one. His face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. Moses had a lot of struggles, but he was constantly going to God. He had a meeting place with God in the camp there. And he'd go and he'd meet with God. He'd speak to God. He was seeking and following God. And every time he went into the presence of the holy God, he came out radiant, literally, his face shining with a reflection of the power and the reassurance and the peace he experienced in God's presence. But after some time had passed, that would fade away. When he'd been away from that encounter with God for a little bit, it would fade away until he went back again. Here's what I want to point out, church. That is the power of worship, of coming before the holy God. Look, just like we do here every Sunday, to praise him, to acknowledge him, to seek him, to listen to him. What we're doing here, that's the power of that. Worship fills us. It solidifies and strengthens and centers us for whatever's going to come, whatever's waiting for us out there, whatever's going to happen tomorrow. It fills us to prepare us for what comes next. That's the importance. That's the potential of what we're doing here and why it needs to be a regular commitment, the highest priority. That's the difference worship and prayer and seeking God in his word can make in your life. Let me tell you what it's not going to do. It's not going to change all the problems. It's not going to resolve all the problems. It's not going to eliminate all the pain. But you will be changed. Worship does not change everything out there. It doesn't change all the circumstances. It doesn't change other people necessarily. But you will be changed. Because you come here and you open the word and you're with God's people and you're praising his name and you're hearing truth. You're hearing some life-giving truth about God, your Father, and how loved you are. And that your identity is in him. You will tap into power beyond yourself. You can go back out into that broken world and all those responsibilities and all those people who don't care or don't understand. You can go back out there, but with shining faces. You can go back out there knowing. Paul wrote about how this strange and wonderful phenomena of radiance experienced by Moses, how it relates to us. You may think that doesn't relate to us, but yes, it does. Paul in 2 Corinthians says, you need to know about that story because this is also part of your story. And I'm going to read the whole thing that Paul talks about. I just want to pull out just a couple verses of what he says. We're not promised that our faces are going to glow literally, but what we're promised is a confidence, an abiding joy, a hope, a new perspective. Here's what Paul says, 2 Corinthians 3:12. Therefore, since we have such a hope, the same hope, the same thing that Moses was experiencing in his encounters with God, we are very bold. We're not like Moses who had to put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. Moses didn't want the people to know when that was fading for him. But here's what Paul says, verse 16. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory. It's what we're doing in worship. Here's what happens. We are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. Your face won't glow, but you keep coming back and encountering and seeking and listening to God, and you will be transformed. Connecting with God, worship, transforms us to be more like him. That's what was happening with Moses. Being in God's presence transferred some of God's essence to Moses. And Moses felt it. And the people could see it. The Moses at the end of the story is not the Moses we met at the burning bush. And in all that time in between, those 40 years in between, some things never changed. Moses was busy. He was too busy. Every day he led Israel until the day he died at 120 years old. And many of the issues that you put on your sermon notes that we've talked about and opened up, they never totally ended for Moses. He lived in some unresolved tension. And so do we. We will live in unresolved tension between the already and the not yet. Between a broken world and our heavenly inheritance. Between obeying God and seeing the reward for that obedience. Between the work we have to put in and the rewards of that work. That's one of the most valuable lessons I have learned in my life is a good life is not avoiding that tension. You have to live in that tension. You're not going to ever totally resolve that tension. A happiness that is an escape from responsibilities and challenges is a pretty empty existence. A meaningful and full life accepts that we live in that tension. And for all the extra burdens and the criticism that Moses endured when he answered God's call, there is no way he would have preferred going back to be a shepherd in the desert. There is no way he would have wanted to miss everything he experienced when he said yes to God. So I don't know about you, I don't know what you took from that lesson, but here's what I took. Here's what I learned from Moses that helps me live in that tension. First, when you're called, say yes. When you feel God tug on your heart, when you feel that twinge of guilt about not doing what you could to bless someone, to speak truth, to show a better way, lean into it. Say yes. Do the right thing. And keep doing the right thing. It's not just a one-time decision. And when you keep doing the right thing, it will not make things easier. More likely, you're going to get more resistance. The voices in your head will give you all sorts of reasons to quit. But if you're faithful, that's success. That is success. That's all God asks you to do is to just obey. Be faithful. Follow. God takes care of the results. God's the one that takes care of the growth. Your part is just to faithfully follow. And you are not enough. You will never be enough. You were not supposed to be enough. That's not God's expectation of you. God's not counting on you to be enough. He's the one who is all sufficient. He's the one who takes care of the rest. And finally, keep worshiping him. You come here again and again and be filled again and be reminded again that you are loved and you have an inheritance. And then go out with a shining face, radiant from being in God's presence with God's people. And church, you'll get through. You'll get through. Whatever's waiting for you outside, whatever's waiting for you tomorrow morning, you'll get through. You'll be able to bear the burden another week. And still keep your joy. Let's go out of this place with shining faces. That's our lesson. Let's stand and sing.